Anything good needs a little editing, right? I'm Daniela Fierro, producer of Vermont Edition. We've edited this podcast for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening to our show.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. February is Black History Month in the U.S. and Canada. To honor it, Vermont Edition will be devoting one show each week in February to exploring a different element of Black life in our region. Today, how local home cooks and restaurateurs are keeping Black food traditions alive, even when key ingredients can be hard to find, and some customers are unfamiliar with certain foods and flavors. In a bit, we're going to be joined by three home cooks and food lovers from our region. But first, let's listen together to a recent mini-episode of the Vermont Public Podcast Homegoings, hosted by Myra Flynn. It's all about a certain food, or condiment, really, hot sauce. Let's take a listen.
Honey, they're ready.
All right. Who wants a burger?
I do.
Oh. About 11 years ago, actors Maya Rudolph and Bernie Mac, may he rest in power, performed this skit on Saturday Night Live. It basically goes like this. They, a Black couple, go to a party hosted by their white friend who's making burgers. When Bernie asks said friend for her hot sauce, and she instead suggests a, substitute?
Oh, hot sauce? Gosh, I don't know. I think we have some salsa.
Panic ensues.
You ain't got no hot sauce. Debbie, baby, you hear that? They ain't got no hot sauce.
Thankfully, Maya Rudolph steps in and saves the day by offering a spicy and portable solution.
I've got it all under control with my new hot sauce carry purse by Tabasco.
Basically, what Maya has is a very, very, very big bag with multiple compartments for multiple bottles of hot sauce, so she can bring her own hot sauce in case of emergency.
Like pool parties, the office, the movie theaters, funerals and shopping, and any party thrown by white people.
It's a hilarious skit, I think, to anybody, but it's particularly hilarious to Black people because we all tend to know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who keeps hot sauce on their person as a just in case, which is why I felt tickled with nostalgia when we received this question from a Homegoings homie back in October. Kaya Morris, a Black Vermonter who wants to know,
where does the history of having hot sauce in your bag in the Black community for women come from?
Yes!
Go on it.
This is Homegoings. I'm Myra Flynn. Today, a question about a spicy condiment that tends to travel with Black folks wherever we eat.
I got one that caught in my car. I got some at work. When I tell you it's everywhere, it's everywhere.
This is a Homegoing Shorty. Welcome home.
Let's see. Eggs, hot sauce. Okay, the meat don't necessarily need hot sauce, but if I got potatoes or something, hot sauce.
Here's the deal. There is a simple and historical answer to Kaya's question about why Black people carry hot sauce in their bags. And it all starts with the Great Migration. This was the early 1900s during the Jim Crow era, when Black folks began leaving the South and traveling by trains, boats, cars, buses, and foot in search of freedom and personal liberty in northern cities. History tells us that they brought hot sauce to ensure they always had a little taste of home with them. And because in the northern places that they were allowed to dine, say, New England, let's just say there may have been no shortage of food in need of a little southern flavor.
You know, now if I get a breakfast burrito, we hot sauce in that burrito. I don't care what's in it. Bacon, cheese, don't matter. Like, I really love hot sauce.
This is Brittany McCray. And as you can hear, she does not use her hot sauce sparingly. And I'm talking with Brittany for this shorty because despite knowing some of the historical context for why hot sauce stays in Black people's bags, I still have some lingering questions, like, why hot sauce? In the early 1900s, there were all kinds of Southern sauces that could have made the cut, like the Eastern North Carolina vinegar, the South Carolina mustard, or the smoky Alabama white mayo. What is it about hot sauce that Black culture loves so much that it made it to the bag? Brittany seems like a good person to talk to because she doesn't just love hot sauce. She makes it.
So I'm the one and only Brittany McCraig. No, I'm just kidding. I wish I could say that, but it's a lot of us. But I am a very unique individual. And I'm started from South Central LA. I was born and raised, so I'm a Cali native. And, you know, I started making hot sauce not too long ago during the pandemic. The name of my company is Exotic Fever Hot Sauce. We strive in making natural products. So all our ingredients are natural ingredients, preservatives as well. And we really specialize in spice and flavor. Everybody who knows me know I love hot sauce. I take it everywhere. Sometimes I'm a little embarrassing because I don't care. The bad part is when I leave it at the restaurant.
All right, top five hot sauces, and then tell me why yours is different.
Okay, now, I love that you asked this question because I still use other people's hot sauce. And everybody's like, well, you make your own, but I like all the hot sauce. So I'm going to start with my number one all-time favorite. I still use it today. I'm trying to take their spot, Red Rooster or Louisiana. That's my number one. Okay, I got to have that with my hot sauce. Number two, I'm going to go to Red Hot. Frank's Red Hot. Number three, Tapatio. I love Mexican hot sauce too. I can't leave a Tapatio out there. We got to have that. Yes. And then number four, Cholula. Cholula. That bangs. Number five, I don't really like green hot sauce, but Tabasco green sauce. I don't like the red, but the green one is kicking.
In my fridge, I just went in my fridge and I was like, what's right here? I had a little bit of the Tapatio left. What I love about Tapatio is that it has, it's almost like you could have as a soup and a hot sauce, like, right? It has like flavor and spice.
I like to say, I made a ghetto Tapatio, okay? We made a black Tapatio with my red sauce because it's similar, but it's a little more spicy and a lot more flavorful.
When I heard Beyonce say, I got hot sauce in my bag, swag.
I got hot sauce in my bag, swag.
The only thing I could think of was my mother, who didn't keep it in her purse, but she kept it in her glove compartment of her car. Your face. Your face.
I got one that caught in my car. I got some at work. When I tell you it's everywhere, it's everywhere. It's in my girlfriend's car, because if I'm not in my car, I still need it. And that's just in case I don't put it in my pocket, because sometimes we be rushing, you know, you forget. But my mom just always bought hot sauce. And I was the person she sent to the store to get the hot sauce. Like, if we made dinner, we didn't have hot sauce, somebody going to the store to get that hot sauce. And I know this sounds crazy, but my dad was a boxer and he used to drink a little hot sauce and go jogging. Yes, he used to drink a little hot sauce and go jogging. And to this day, I have to not give him a lot of hot sauce because my hot sauce is so good, he'd be drinking it down like, Daddy, it's not juice, okay?
So tell me, you know, what is up with Black people carrying hot sauce in their bag?
What I think is, from dating back to, you know, centuries ago, we always did what? The cooking, the farming. We dealt with what? All the spices, the flavors. So when we go back to slavery, who was cooking the food and who loved it more? That's why they love fried chicken today, because of us, because we were in the kitchen.
The food that we had as slaves, right? Like, a lot of it was inedible. So, you know, how do you make a spine taste good? How do you make feet? How do you make intestines? These throwaway scraps that we were given, right? Like, how do you make it taste good?
Right. You know what? Dating back to that, scraps, intestines, chillings. What's the combo for chillings? Hot sauce and chillings. That's the combo. You got to have the hot sauce on the chillings. That's a Black recipe. Like, you have to have them with hot sauce.
So, other kinds of food outside of Black food. Is there a reason that you bring hot sauce? Like, for instance, is other food bland? Is it the ketchup of Black culture? What's happening?
Majority of people like a little spice. And like I said, even though the food may be good, you still want to add a little something on there, a little sour cream. You know how we are. I'm not like the Black people, a little extra. We a little extra. We need to add a little extra something to the food. You know, that's what makes it good, though. And then not even that, it's like your soul, like how we make soul food. We need a little flavor spice. It's the seasoning. And I think that when it comes to hot sauce, is like an extra seasoning to us.
Why do you think Beyonce put this in her song? Like, what is it about carrying this sauce?
I think Beyonce wanted us to know that she's here, you know, though. Like, she a celebrity, but she's still Black first. You know, let she let you know I do Black things. I carry this hot sauce with me.
Today on the show, we are discussing Black foodways and how local Black chefs and home cooks are keeping their food traditions alive and thriving in this largely racially homogenous region of ours. This is the first in our weekly February series honoring Black History Month. Joining me in the studio today is Myra Flynn. She's the host and executive producer of Homegoings, a show that features candid conversations about race and many other things. Myra, welcome back to the show.
What is up, Michaela? So great.
So glad to have you. We have a packed studio today. Also with us is Harmony Adosimwan of Burlington. She's the owner of Harmony's Kitchen, a takeout and catering business. Harmony, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Great to have you here. And last but not least, at our table with us today is Leanne McCrary of Jeffersonville. She's a home cook, a former restaurant owner, and works in food service with the University of Vermont Medical Center in Burlington. Welcome.
Hi there. How's it going?
Good. So glad to have all three of you with us today. Oh, Myra, you have discussed food a couple different times on the podcast and show Homegoings. What intrigues you about reporting on food traditions?
Well, first of all, I am a fan of food.
I know you are. Yes. I've eaten with you.
I know. I was just hearing you say, perhaps you've eaten with one of these ladies. I think perhaps you have, Michaela, a time or two. big fan of food. But also, you know, the show Homegoings is always trying to find like the nuance of, you know, what's beneath a topic that we might take for granted or seemingly think we already know everything about, right? So soul food in particular is one of those things that on its surface might be like an easy way into talking about culture or race or even just food. But if you look below it, there's a whole history of our ancestors and our people making something out of nothing and turning it into this amazing cultural explosion that like will never be going away. And I think that deserves to be talked about as much as possible and eaten.
And speaking of cultural explosion, I'm really glad that you included a clip, a teaser, not enough, I would say, of Beyonce's Formation.
Yes.
From 2016, which I can't believe is almost a decade ago that that song came out. But it made that line, hot sauce in my bag.
Say it.
Ubiquitous. Say it. Swag.
I was waiting for the swag. Yes, got hot sauce in my bag. Swag. Yeah, that line, I don't want to speak for all of us, but I feel like maybe I can. It really touched a lot of us because we all know somebody who has hot sauce in their bags if it's not like us. You keep
you're
it
raising
on
your
you,
hand,
right?
Leanne.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
So it's not in my bag, but a couple of years ago for my birthday, my friend Gabby from New York City gave me a really tiny little hot sauce. It was what's the one with the green cat?
Tabasco.
It was a Tabasco. It was a tiny little Tabasco.
Oh, I've seen those. They're so cute. Mm-hmm.
I know. I don't even want to open it, but I might have to one day.
You might need to.
So, I mean, I think it's one of those things that I think I might start carrying around with me more often.
Totally. Harmony, are you a hot sauce person?
You know, funny story about me and hot sauce. I had this weird relationship with hot sauce, I feel like. And I always felt, so like, you know, I'm known for making my fried chicken, right? Growing up eating fried chicken, I always found that if you needed, this is my weird beliefs, if you needed hot sauce with the fried chicken, that means the fried chicken by itself isn't good, you know?
Oh.
So I'm like, I felt like people were adding it because, you know, the chicken, this is really controversial. I
felt like you were just gonna gasp.
I thought if people were adding it, that meant that, you know, the chicken itself wasn't seasoned. So I stayed away from it. I was like, my chicken doesn't need hot sauce. But then one day, Ooh. This is like a couple years ago. I was like,
say it.
You know, eating my chicken, I was like, you know, let me see what it tastes like with hot sauce. And when I say that enhanced my chicken like no tomorrow, I was like, I am a believer in hot sauce now. I've been converted.
She ascended.
I was like, wow. Welcome. Yes, you can have Welcome. Really good seasoned chicken, and hot sauce is an enhancer, yep. you know? Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Yeah, for me, it's fried catfish. Oh. There will not be fried catfish without hot sauce. Mm-hmm. And mind you, like, I don't do spicy well. Like, my body is not super psyched when I eat it, but you will suffer and you'll like it mm-hmm. when you're having catfish or catfish po' boy or something like that.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up catfish, Myra, because it is a great fish that does not come from the sea. And Vermont, of course, does not have a coastline. And I was wondering if that might be one of the barriers to why there, you know, there aren't a ton of restaurants in our region that serve like traditional Black and Southern and Creole cuisine, which oftentimes feature, you know, things like shrimp and other fish, oysters, stuff like that, that isn't, you know, quite native to this part of the country. Mm. Do you think that plays in at all?
Well, what do you think might be reason number one, Michaela? Mm. Right? That homogeneity we were talking about.
It's very
earlier,
white here.
Right? It's very, very white here. And also, that has a lot to do with systemic problems that exist today, but also the migration stream during the Great Migration. Not a lot of us dropped off here, you know, and hung out here, right? And so I do think that there are some just cultural barriers to, like, I don't know, palate or taste, even though most people I know once they've had some soul food love it. But as far as making it something that's kind of entangled with tradition, I'd say like Vermont in particular has other traditions, right? But I do think that when it comes to what you can source here, it's pretty much everything that's in, I mean, you all know better than me because you make the food for a living, but you can source most things here. I know I struggled to find ham hocks for a while, but like collard greens are here, black eyed peas are here.
Yes.
You can get catfish here. You can get chicken here to fry. You can't, you know, so I think I'd maybe more say there's a challenge with like some of the other, which it shouldn't even be because we have lots of cows here, but like brisket, I'm thinking like more like Southern barbecue soul food might be a little more difficult here, but I don't know. I'll let the experts speak to
Liam,
this.
Liam, when you were running a restaurant, were there any ingredients that you ever struggled to find?
Not really, because I kind of shaped my menu around sort of Americanized comfort food. Mm-hmm. I just infused it with a whole lot of flavor. So what I was doing was I was working with, or I was trying to work with as many local people as I could to get my food products and what I was going to make. But my flavor combinations all come from like developing the flavor, you know, adding ingredients such as, you know, caramelized onions to kind of enhance and round out like the flavor of something like a soup or a stew. So basically what I did was slow cooking. And then when I served it, it was pretty much just, you know, heating it up. Other than, of course, you know, the stuff that I was cooking right away, which was like burgers and fried chicken sandwiches. But No, I didn't have a problem with getting, but I probably, you know, had more issues when I was trying to do like traditional South African meat pies when I first started out in my food career in Vermont, and I was trying to produce meat pies, and I just didn't have like the capital to do that. So, but yeah, I mean, I think any flavor that I want, I can make it. So
I want to come back to your South African roots in just a moment. But first, Harmony, same question to you. Were there any ingredients that you use regularly that are hard to find in Vermont? I mean, you're from New York originally, right? The city where you can get anything.
Literally anything. Like anything you can think of.
Anytime.
You just got any very time wistful. Of night.
Anytime. And specifically, I'm from the Bronx. So, you know, the Bronx is like such a melting pot of different cultures. But I loved what you said when you said that, you know, you kind of like just any flavor you need, you make it, you know. And that's kind of like what soul food is, you know, making something out of nothing. And with me, my specific style of soul food, I do Afrofusion soul food, so it's a mix of Puerto Rican and Nigerian and Southern cuisines. And so I find that I do have trouble sourcing some items, like plantains, for instance. Plantains are, like, pretty difficult to source in a consistent basis. I've like now found like, you know, local markets that I'm able to go to, but that is something that I do constantly struggle with in terms of that. But yeah.
Because you can't substitute a banana.
No, you can't do that.
Just like that. That's the real type they might kind of look the same, but you can't do it.
Yeah, right. And also all like all fruits in Vermont, I would assume is kind of difficult to source on a consistent and regular basis, right? Yeah. Like seasonally, we seasonally get it here.
Well, we are discussing Black food traditions and soul food today. Certain comfort foods are coming up a lot. And if these are foods that you grew up eating and spark a particular food memory for you, give us a call at 800-639-2211. Leanne, let's go back to your roots and some of the food traditions that you carry with you today. Tell us about your connection to South Africa.
Sure. So my mom is South African. She's Zulu. And my dad is American. He was born in Albany, New York. And he when he moved out to South Africa as a resident in the hospital in Johannesburg, he met my mom, unfortunately, during apartheid times. There is a whole story behind that. Wow. And they were actually were not allowed to even stay in the country due to being in a relationship together. But yeah, you know, somehow they found each other. My mom is Zulu. And so I grew up with a very kind of Americanized outlook on life. Like my dad always told me, you're an American, you know, like very patriotic. But my mom taught me how to cook. So I basically absorbed, you know, just like watching my mom kind of like chop onions over the pot in her hand, you know, and when I learned how to do that and, you know, moving here and doing that, and people were like, oh my God, you know, that's so dangerous. And it's like, well, I learned how to do it in a safe way. Like I'm not just, you know, doing this for the first time. But, you know, things like that, that remind me of home. Like you were just talking about fruit and how fruit is pretty, you know, hard to come by around here, especially cost wise. And I'm sure now it's going to be even more difficult to come by. But that's one of the things that my mom always cooked Sunday lunch. And one of the precious things about Sunday lunch is we always had a salad to start, and we always had a fruit salad as dessert.
Oh,
and we
would something fresh at the beginning and the end.
Yeah, and so fruit salad for me kind of was always like a treat growing up. Like we'd have it at the end of the meal, and she would make like a yellow custard. It's not very popular in the U.S., but she'd make a yellow custard out of like a custard mix or whatever. Yeah. And we'd have custard and fruit salad with just some cream on it. Mm. And that was like, oh my God, that was the best treat ever. And just to have that for Sunday lunch, like it brought back that memory. So now I try and do that as much as possible with my kids. Obviously, you know, we're not going to have massive fruit salads, but they get really excited about it. And I'm like, well, it's because you're a Vermonter.
You haven't seen fruit months.
I grew up eating, you know, like tropical fruit, mangoes and bananas and, you know, all these guavas and just amazing fruit. So it's just one of those things I like to pass on and be like, you know, it's a gift.
Yeah.
It's a little gift I can give to people.
And Myra, you learned a lot about food and cooking from your mom too, right?
Yeah, definitely. My mom has appeared on Homegoings more than once, and it's typically something about motherhood or food, which I do think go hand in hand in a lot of Black homes and in our history. My mom is hilarious. She will, you know, these days I'm pescatarian, and a lot of that is for digestive reasons, in case anybody would like to know. But my so that means that, you know, when there isn't a ton of fish around, I'm eating mostly veggies. And so my mom will often, when I come back to Vermont, make me a big pot of vegetable soup to take to work, except there's like three ham hocks that have been smoking.
It doesn't count if it's in soup.
The entire time. And I always take it and I always say thank you. And I can like maybe get through a little of it without having some digestive stuff going on because I just don't eat that kind of meat anymore. But listen, that's mama's soup. You do not say no. So some funny stuff like that where, you know, just like the seasoning and what she calls like the taste yeah. of things is something that's really uncompromising for her. And I find with a lot of the Black mamas in my life, in all forms and figures, that's pretty consistent across the board, that they will find whatever needs to be found wherever to get to the taste. Mm-hmm. And they will also let you know if your food does not have the taste when you try to cook them a meal. So that's a lot of my experience.
And Harmony, you also incorporate lots of different types of food traditions into your cooking. You mentioned Latinx food traditions. You also have Nigerian roots. Can you tell us a little bit about how you incorporate all those together?
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, my food, I like to call it Afrofusion soul food. And I feel like it's kind of me paying homage to me growing up in the Bronx, you know, it being such like a melting pot of different cultures. I grew up, you know, really adjacent to Puerto Rican culture. And so that's something that has always had such a profound impact on me. And so I knew when I started my business, I like wanted to incorporate, you know, my culture of being, I'm Nigerian American. I know I wanted to do Southern food because, you know, that just wasn't really found here. And I had to incorporate Puerto Rican food because, you know, it just means so much to me.
That's what you grew up with.
Yeah, exactly. And so one of the main reasons why I started my business is because, you know, these types of foods aren't really found here in New England. And Harmony's Kitchen is like on a mission to change that.
Hmm. And you started this business when you were an undergrad at UVM, right? Well, how in the world did you have time to do that and also go to college? I'm so impressed.
It was pretty hard, honestly, but I'm kind of happy I did it. I started it when I was a senior at the University of Vermont. Shout out to UVM. I started it because, like I said, I was like going around Burlington. And I was like, where's all the soul food? Where's all the like the good food that I grew up eating? And I just started off by selling plates to my classmates and schoolmates, and it kind of just grew from there. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It actually reminds me a little bit of you, Leanne, not just with the restaurant that you had in Jeffersonville, but you also told me that you cook for your family and a church in your community too, right?
Yeah, I'm actually really enjoying that a lot more. I have to say, owning a food service business is none other than absolutely heartbreaking. Mm. Not only because of, you know, just kind of what can happen to make you go out of business, but, you know, it's almost like you're begging the public to like your food. You're selling your food and you're hoping to make a profit. And in a way, and absolutely, I don't think that about everybody. I thought that of my endeavor, really. And I think I really enjoy a lot more giving food from my heart and not expecting anything back in return. Mm. I think it keeps my heart a little bit safer as an artist, as a creator, to make something and give it with intention and not expect anything back for it. But that's just more of from a spiritual perspective. I'm not particularly religious, but I do like to be able to. And when I had, my restaurant open, I really relished the moments when I was able to give away food. Mm-hmm. That made me just feel like it was more worth it. Hmm. So maybe it all happened for a reason. And maybe now that I'm working with the church to do it. I'm also working with Cambridge Cares, which is a nonprofit organization in Cambridge, Vermont, where, you know, we just care about our neighbors. And if somebody is not able to provide something for themselves, we try and make it happen. And I've been a recipient of care and love and generosity from Cambridge Cares. So it's nice to be able to pass that on and say, look, I have the ability now, I have the time, I have, you know, the resources through this group to be able to cook this food for you and give you a break from cooking tonight if, you know, if you're hurt or you're sick or you just can't make it happen. Mm. So it's nice to be able to do that. Mm. Yeah.
I feel like that's that spirit of care and generosity is kind of at the heart of a lot of the Black food traditions that we're discussing today.
Well, the expectation is you take home a plate. Mm-hmm. You come get a plate. And if you can't come, you send a neighbor or a friend or somebody else to get your plate.
Yep. Or we're coming by after.
Or we're coming by after. Or we might even leave it on the porch, on the front porch, so that whoever can come by after can swing by in a group text and come get their plate.
Yep.
So like sharing, it takes so long to make soul food.
Yeah,
it takes days. It takes so long. Yeah.
It's a full-time
and
job.
You don't want to see a little bit of it go to waste. And some of it, you know, my mom might freeze the black-eyed peas or the collards. But, like, I don't really want to freeze the mac and cheese. Like, I don't want to freeze cheese. I don't
We're sharing it.
We're sharing it. Yeah, you'd rather see it get eaten.
Yeah, come get some.
Yeah, so it is definitely that care, but it's also just kind of like the whole point of it is community.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm glad you brought up the labor of food prep and harmony. I know you're living that life right now. Can you talk a little bit about some of the dishes that take not just hours but days to prepare?
Yeah. I would say most of my food, the thing about soul food and what's so like unique about it is that, like you were saying, it's a really spiritual endeavor. You know, there's a reason why it's called soul food. You're literally cooking from your soul. And so I feel like whenever I'm cooking, I'm literally giving a piece of myself in my food. Because, you know, you want, when people eat your food, you want them to feel like filled, you know, like satisfied.
And boy, do we. Your food is so good.
Thank you. But I would say collard greens takes hours. It can take probably multiple days because I like to spread up my prep. I'll like clean the collards one day and then the next day I'll cook all of it. What else takes? My fried chicken takes a long time because I like to marinate my chicken over time. That takes a long time. Mm. My baked mac and cheese, pretty much everything. I think the only, and then now I'm starting to incorporate more Nigerian food, and Nigerian food takes even longer, guys.
Oh, wow.
Like, holy smokes. it takes a long, long
time.
Like,
what's one dish that you're incorporating now?
Yeah, so now I'm going to be bringing, I'm actually for an event that I'm doing on Friday for the Howard Center, I'm cooking Nigerian rice and stew, and the stew in that, it's like a tomato-based stew. That just takes, like, hours upon hours, and, like, usually, when I cook the stew, I'm cooking in small batches, and so that already takes hours. But this is gonna be for 40 people, so that's gonna take like probably I'm gonna cook it starting tomorrow for Friday. I'm just gonna just keep going, you know. But yeah, but it's all fun. It's all great. And it's amazing.
Leanne, tell us a little bit about your work in food service in the hospital here in Burlington. I mean, we were just talking about the care that goes into preparing food and giving it to somebody. How does that show up in your work now?
Yeah. So right now, I am actually I'm a tray passer, which means that I deliver food to the patient rooms at the medical center in Burlington. And it's funny because I thought that this would be one of those jobs that's like, whew, thank God, you know, I don't have to, you know, put my body and my energy and my soul and my spirit, like when I was cooking and I said, oh, you know, I'm going to have a break. Right. Yeah. I'm going to have a break. And, you know, being a highly empathetic person, obviously, I find myself very connected to the job because when I do go around the hospital, you know, I'm representing, you know, customer service, but I'm also, you know, representing myself and coming into the rooms, you know, I'm trying to be as kind and as compassionate as possible. And I realize that a lot of the time people are at their worst, you know, they're in hospital and they may not show up in, you know, great ways, you know, they may not be happy or grateful or anything like that, but what always brings it home to me is that these are people who are extremely vulnerable, and it's actually quite an honor to be able to serve them with the food that we make at the hospital, because the hospital actually does endeavor to support a lot of local farms and producers and makes pretty much every meal from scratch. So the food is excellent. And a lot of the times I meet people who feel like that's the best food they've ever had.
Nice.
And it really makes my heart go out, and I still feel that connection to people, which, you know, it you know, as a chef at Harmony knows, like, you want people to be happy, you want people to be taken care of and feel better and heal. And so it still feeds me spiritually in that way without having to actually cook the food. I may go into a role of cooking because I just enjoy it so much. I can't stay away. But for now, you know, I'm making all the things at home. You know, my husband says, "Ooh, can you make this?" And I say, "Yes, I can." And, you know, I look in my cookbooks and I look online and I figure out a way to make it my own, and I make it. And he's like, "Oh, we never have to go to any other restaurants ever again." I'm like, "Well,
I need a break every once in a while." Well, you can visit Harmony's Kitchen.
Exactly. So that's what I'm doing. I want to find and support and encourage as many people who are doing this, because Harmony, I know how much it actually takes out of you. And I just wanted to remind you, take those times, those moments to rest, refuel, take a break. You know, we'll be here when you get back.
We'll
be waiting, because you are just like, from what I've heard, and I can't wait to try your food, but from what I've heard, it's amazing. So I can't wait to try it.
I really try. And Essex Farm Resort sees me all the time. Because I'm resting over there with their day passes.
Yes. Get that rest in.
Harmony, I'm curious. Could you tell us a little bit more about what it was like to be serving soul food when you were a student at UVM to your fellow students? And I'm thinking particularly here of other students of color, Black students, who might not have had this food that you're serving in a while, and it's food that reminds them of home.
Yeah. It was, like, honestly a really cool experience. The thing about, I realized about Vermont and being on UVM campus is that when you start something new, like, folks are, like, so excited and they just want to support you. And that's why, like, having a business in Vermont, I think, is, like, one of the best, because it's a really, like, supporting place. And so when I started, I immediately had, like, so many of my, like, schoolmates being like, "I need to try that. Like, this is new. Like, I'm tired of the dining hall food," which, no shade to Sodexo. Sodexo was lit. But, you know, like, sometimes if you're eating the same thing over and over, you want something new. And so that's what I was kind of providing to my fellow students. And I wasn't the only student who was chefing it up. There was another student who actually went to school with me back home in the Bronx. He was doing kind of like a New York to Vermont vibe. And so that's what kind of, like, also inspired me to start my business too, to keep that going. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
Very cool. Well, let's take a call. We have Shauna calling in from Montpelier. Shauna, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I worked in North Philadelphia many years ago, and there was a restaurant there that was entirely vegan and soul food. Very Black neighborhood, North Philadelphia, and I always wondered what the story was about this. I'm vegetarian and I keep kosher, and I was very interested in this restaurant where I could actually eat everything. So, if anyone know anything about that?
Oh, well, thanks, Shauna, for calling in. Yeah, I'm curious if any of our chefs and home cooks here do soul food in a vegan way.
Yeah, you do. I would just say also, if we touch on the greens episode, which Harmony was in.
The homegoings episode about collard greens.
The homegoings episode about collard greens. At any point, I can share what one of our other guests said there. But I'd love to hear first, Harmony, you're doing vegan?
Yeah. I do vegan soul
food as
well. I love
this. Tell my mother.
Yeah, for sure. Is your mom vegan?
No, I am. I'm talking about the ham hocks and the vegetable soup still.
Yeah, you know what's funny about, so I make vegan collards now, and I actually use oyster mushrooms. Nice. As like kind of like that meat basis, but that's how I also
now that's
make
Vermont.
Yeah, you see. So the thing about Harmony's Kitchen is that we were talking about earlier about like the traditions of Vermont. I'm trying to infuse like the traditions of Vermont into my food, like using local ingredients. I use a lot of maple syrup in my stuff now. Like, I think it's just great. But yeah, I do vegan soul food. I do vegan fried chicken, which I make out of oyster mushrooms. I do a vegan mac. I do a vegan collards. Like I said, I use the oyster mushrooms for that. But, you know, I was vegetarian for a number of years, no longer that. but I believe that, you know, vegan food, vegetarian food shouldn't be an afterthought. I think these foods can be just as good as, like, quote unquote, regular food. And so I try my best to do that. There's also another lady who does all vegan soul food. Her name is Empress Levy Soul Food, but she does all vegan soul food here too. So the landscape of Vermont is changing, y'all. There's a lot of cool things going on.
Mm. Well, Shauna, there you go. Empress Levy and Harmony's Kitchen, both serving up vegan soul food within a short drive of Montpelier. Myra, what were you going to say about collards? Yeah.
So, well, what I was going to say, so we touched on this. It is controversial, I think, the vegan soul food movement, yes. Right? Especially with some of the older heads, as we call them, who do believe that traditional Black soul food should stay the same. The problem is with it, and has been proven, is that, you know, a lot of this food exists because we were given as enslaved peoples these inedible scraps of the animals. So take like the feet or the spine or the intestines, things that people are not supposed to be eating. The way that we made it edible was by adding what I called the taste earlier, but kind of this trifecta, right, of these ingredients that involved a lot of butter, a lot of salt, and a lot of hot sauce or some kind of a seasoning that made some sort of like really intense spice. But over time, what do you think a diet of a lot of salt, a lot of butter, and a lot of spice does, right? So Black folks also in America have some of the highest rates of high blood pressure, diabetes. You know, our culture really struggles with some of these things. Now, Kevin Bledsoe in the episode, who is a world famous and TV talented Netflix star barbecue guy. Yeah, he's hilarious, and he said, I think explicitly in the episode, like, ain't none of this food giving us diabetes. It's not like we eat soul food every day. It takes too long to cook, right? So there's some controversy there. But I do think that a lot of the vegan soul food movement did begin to, in order to alleviate some of this, like, harm that, you know, because it ain't slavery anymore, right? Like, we do have the option to kind of create the taste, but in ways that are healthier for our bodies. And then there just, of course, is more veganism popping up. But whether or not that is still traditional Black soul food is, you know, up for debate.
Mm. I don't think it's traditional Black soul food, but I think it's like, when I think of vegan soul food, I think of the same concepts of like Afrofuturism. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Vegan soul food is like the future of soul food.
I love you. Like, what? Octavia Butler, no, goes,
like,
chef.
That's something like something about Harmony's Kitchen, because I consider myself kind of being like the new generation of soul food chefs that's trying to like keep the tradition alive. And I like to think of Harmony's Kitchen as being like an Afrofuturistic business, you know, like what does soul food look like in 2080? You know, I'm sure it's going to be vegan. It has to be.
Yeah, we'll be able to sustain some of the things that we have. Exactly. But what it was born from, right, I think is the thing that people kind of like, you know, shirk at the idea of like making it vegan is just kind of keeping in line with, you know, there's a lot of remembering of our history that goes into our food. Yes. And we're not the only culture that does this. Mm. And so there's also something about soul food that was created so that we could keep traveling with it, cook it down, stew it down, so it would better preserve with some of these ingredients, so that you could migrate, so that you could underground railroad, so that you could go when you needed to go. And how to maintain that with, you know, vegetables would be different. So there's a lot of differences between these, although I do think I love the Afrofuturism in soul food, here for it, and also totally understand why, like, somebody like my grandmother, rest in peace, like, would be like, what are you even talking about? Like, you know, it's all very interesting.
Yeah,
because it's like there's memories, and there's a sense of specialness that you're recreating every time, but because you're an artist and you're a creator, you're making it new, and you're making it into something that only comes from you. Mm-hmm. Like, when people would come to my food truck or my restaurant, they would react like they had never tasted that kind of food ever before. Mm-hmm. And it's like a burger or a fried chicken sandwich or a burrito, but it's because of the flavor development and the things that I'm putting into it, and the energy, the spiritual energy, the intention, you know, that was going into it. It's not going to taste like something that just dropped out of a bag of frozen stuff into a fryer. You know, it's going to taste like something you can only get there, you know. So I respect that. I think that's amazing, because you're you're reveling in like artistry.
Yeah.
And like, it's kind of like a dance. It's like a beautiful dance between like the past and the future. And you're gorgeous.
Oh, so
like,
thank
it's
you.
Like, I mean, it's perfect.
Thank you.
I can't wait to try your food.
That's why I still got to do my classic soul food, because I just love that when folks come from the South and they're like, oh my gosh, like your food tastes just like home. Like I still need that ego boost in my heart. So
yeah.
And I love fried chicken. I literally eat fried chicken, y'all, like almost every single day. So I swear to y'all, think I'm joking. I swear to you, but I do my fried chicken with a side of salad. That's what people don't miss. Like, you don't have to take things away. You just got to add things, you know? So,
true. And you probably keep it moving quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah. She's using up all of the
energy. I eat soul food every day, y'all.
Yeah, Harmony needs to travel with food. I don't want to see you without a bag of your food. Please do not come in here anymore.
Unless you have... bring my food to Vermont.
There you go.
Public, always.
Yes.
Before we wrap up, Myra, you have a homegoings event coming up soon. I want to give you a minute to tell folks what it's about, because maybe people listening to this conversation want to hear more.
Want to hear more.
More Myra.
Well, we're going to talk less about food at this event and more about sex.
Okay.
And racism. There's this book I read in college that was from 1960s called Sex and Racism in America, and it was pretty life-changing for me. It was all about how our traumas inform how we're attracted to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And for my Stereo Antitype series on homegoings, I ended up interviewing a sexologist named Taomi Morgan from Atlanta, and she had so much to say on how we can love each other better, break down some of our barriers and our biases, and like come together from a less trauma-informed past, but instead like find each other in new and beautiful ways. Afro-futuristic love,
yes,
perhaps, right? But I think that now is a time where it is really crucial to figure out how to love one another as best we can. And so we are putting on an event at Vermont Public Studios on Saturday, February 8th at 5 p.m. It's going to be a live taping, so there will be cameras there. But basically, Taomi and I are going to talk about some of this stuff, and she's going to run us through a totally platonic speed dating exercise where you're going to get to break down some barriers with your neighbors. So it'll be like our own little Valentine's Day celebration.
Oh, I love that. And next week, Vermont Edition's doing a show for Valentine's Day all about platonic love.
Oh,
so
I love
just,
that.
Yeah, look at those tie-ins.
Look at that.
Synergy. Myra Flynn is the host and executive producer of Homegoings. Myra, thank you so much, as always, for coming
on. Thank you. And thank you, Queens. It's so great to be in here with you.
Yes,
we are also joined today by Leanne McCrary of Jeffersonville. Leanne, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you guys for having me.
And Harmony Adosamwen of Burlington, the owner of Harmony's Kitchen. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.